check. Okay. Sorry about that. I think we're ready to go. 3:15. So let's get started. We are going to talk about preserve, delete, and archive in Exchange. Most of you are either on on-premises Exchange or Office 365 or both in a hybrid deployment. So let's get started. My name is Bharat Suneja. I'm in the Exchange engineering team. I am a content developer slash technical writer. I specialize in information protection, which includes security. It includes archiving, MRM, journaling, encryption, and so on. So a lot of fun stuff. So thanks for coming. Because you're here, I would assume that you have an interest in compliance and archiving. How many of you think it's a fun topic? I'm not surprised. Yay, no, we don't do that when we hear the word compliance, right? So let's take a look at what we have for you today. Our vision for compliance. Just one quick slide. What is our vision with compliance? It is to empower the user. Whatever client applications that they're using, they should be able to transparently be able to meet the compliance requirements. And we'll see some of the features that are enabled in different client applications. Enable the compliance officer. So in the past, if you've gone through this, whenever there's a requirement, for example, to do e-discovery searches or to meet other regulatory compliance requirements, all the burden falls typically on the IT pro, who is tasked with going to have to, you know, collect the PSTs or, you know, import data, do searches, you know, so on. What we want to do is enable the compliance officer to be able to perform compliance-related tasks. So with minimum permissions required for them to do their tasks and not really have to bother IT pros too much to do these tasks. We want to make it super easy for IT to actually know about these features, to deploy these features, and to be, empower the compliance officers within their organization. So that's less work that you have to do on a day-to-day basis to meet these compliance requirements. And the underlying theme is in place. So we want to keep your data in place. If your data is in Exchange or Exchange Online, we want to keep it there rather than having to remove it, put it into a different repository, and then do other kinds of processing on that. So whether it's Exchange or SharePoint or other workloads. And the big theme, again, is the end user should have a very easy, smooth-going workflow. They should not really be impacted whether IT or the compliance officer wants to retain your email for X amount of time. They should not come and tell you, hey, don't delete the email, because we're going to go through a e-discovery process. So first step is, of course, archiving. How has it worked so far? Here's a quote for you. And I think when Galileo was thinking about this, about discovery, of course, he wasn't really aware of e-discovery, but there is some connection there when you think about this. All truths are easy to understand, and once they are discovered, the point is to discover them. Or as one popular TV series had it, the truth is out there. You just have to go find it. So what's the pattern here in these number of cases? Any idea what these are? Fines. Fines for not being able to meet different regulatory requirements, generally e-discovery requirements, which means when you get a subpoena or a court order or an e-discovery request, there's no request, you have to do it, right? You have to have the data available. Simple as that. Now, we go back to, does your organization have a messaging policy? Does it dictate how long are you going to keep data, whether it's email or documents or whatever? So is there a life cycle there? And if you do have a policy, then are you actually keeping by that policy, obeying that policy or not? You have to be able to demonstrate it. Now, some industries, such as financials and, you know, healthcare related, different industries have different regulatory requirements, and they are mandated to keep data for X amount of time. It may be because they're a public company, it may be because they are operating in a certain industry or certain part of the world which has a different regulatory requirement, right? In all of these cases, it becomes important that you understand the rules that apply to you, figure out whether you have devised a messaging policy that meets those regulatory requirements, and then how you implement it. And failure to do that, and failure to be able to reproduce messages and other data is going to result in fines. So heavy fines. Now, why archive? One of the reasons is, of course, reducing risk from PSTs. Now, back in the days, if anybody remembers, when Hotmail started, for example, which is my earlier memory of email, the mailboxes were 2 megabytes. Anybody remember that? 2 megabyte email mailboxes? And on we went, and there was Gmail and, you know, large mailboxes and so on. Our expectations grew, our storage requirements grew, and we simply didn't want to delete email. How many of us don't want to delete email because I might need it sometime in the future, right? Result is, over the years, data collects, you have large and large mailboxes. Many organizations still have mailbox quotas, okay? Small mailbox quotas. And now this all results in users taking the data out, putting it in a PST file on their computer. It also increases e-discovery costs when all these PST files are spread all across your organization. It could be on the user's home computer, or it could be on their laptop, it could be on a file share. To be able to gather these PST files and bring all that data back could take a long time if you're going to fulfill an e-discovery request, there's high chances you will fail. So we're reducing the risk from that. The next part is, besides archiving, is deleting email. Reducing the risk. So there is risk in not having messages when you need them. There is also risk in having too many messages, right? If your policy says I'm going to store messages for 7 years or 5 years or 2 years, whatever, right? And you have not deleted the messages, you have not managed the email lifecycle, that there's risk there. You're exposing yourself, right? So you want to be able to manage the email lifecycle. And you want to be able to preserve these messages for e-discovery, whether it's legal or regulatory requirements, whether it's business requirements. For instance, companies that do drug companies that do tests and so on, they are required to maintain this data for a very long time. Some law firms maintain their data indefinitely. That's their policy, that's fine, as long as they know and they understand, that's okay. Now, how have we done this? How have we archived data in the past? We've used something called journaling, which was a built-in feature in Exchange. Mail hit the transport server, and a journal rule fired, and it generated a journal report. And that's what you see on the right side of the screen. Now, the journal report basically has the sender, recipient, the message ID, all the message metadata. And it has a list of all the recipients, whether they were in the to field, in the BCC field, or the CC field. So this helped you correlate all the recipients that received a message. Now, a lot of people kept it in their Exchange mailboxes. There would be one mailbox designated as a journaling mailbox, which is where these were delivered. A lot of organizations pushed this out to a third-party archiving system on-premises or a service, archiving services. So they would just give you an SMTP address. You plug that in into your journal rule, and it basically delivered these journal reports outside your organization to a service. So one of the drawbacks of this, of course, is items that are not in the transport pipeline, things like appointments, things like drafts, those things will never get journaled. Because this fires in the transport pipeline on a transport server, only messages that are sent and received that go through the transport pipeline were journaled. So the original message, as you see, is attached. There's a bunch of metadata. Now we move to large mailboxes and archives, or archiving. And the benefits are, A, unlike PSTs, which are only accessible from the computer that has that data file, this one is accessible from all computers using OWA and Outlook Web App. You spend less time managing mailbox quotas because now you have large mailboxes and you have archive mailboxes. You eliminate the risk of corrupted PST files, of course, because all the data is on the server. The servers or the service, Office 365, is highly available, so there's less risk of losing that data. And you're greatly simplifying your whole retention and archiving effort. What does it look like to users? It's basically an integrated and consistent experience. Whether they use Outlook, whether they use OWA, the archive, which you see at the bottom of the screen, basically shows up as an additional mailbox, just like a normal PST would. They can drag and drop messages to it. They can use inbox rules to move messages to the archive mailbox. Or you can apply archiving policies where you say, after 2 years or 3 years or whatever you would like, move these messages automatically to the archive. Now, they're still accessible to the user after they move to the archive. So it creates a very seamless, very effortless experience for the user. Now, when the user searches for messages, whether it's Outlook or Outlook Web App, messages from both the mailbox and the archive show up. Now, they can select whether they want just the mailbox or the mailbox and the archive, which is the default if they have an archive. Conversations or threads show up as a single thread regardless of whether the message is in the primary mailbox or the archive. So, search everywhere. The conversation view. So let's go take a look at the archive experience. I have a user here, Katie Jordan. She has an archive. On top you will see the user's mailbox. On the bottom is the archive. I can basically take a message from here, or let's actually go and create a folder in the archive. So it's just like a PST, but it's now available everywhere. So let's say, and I can simply drag it from the mailbox and put it in the archive. There we go. Okay. Now let's go, while we're still in the primary mailbox, let's look for sports. Okay. So I'm going to say search for subject sports. Or how about just entire mailbox. So for some reason, I don't have the choice here yet. Okay, but you get the idea. I should be able to search here and be able to search both the primary and the archive mailbox. So other than that, user can create inbox rules. So I can go here and create a rule. Okay, new rule, and I can basically say, move the message to a folder, select a folder, and the archive mailbox should show up here, which it is not right now. Okay, two demos in a row that didn't get the desired results. But rather than try to troubleshoot that, I'm going to move on and talk about how it works. So it's a second mailbox, basically, that's associated with the user. You use the same tools to manage. So for the admin also, it's very transparent. Same storage requirements, same high availability requirements, whether you're on premises, you don't have to differentiate between the primary and the archive mailboxes. So it's a seamless experience. Now, where does the data reside? If you're on premises, the data can reside on a primary and archive, either on the same mailbox server, or you can put it on different mailbox servers, or different volumes will store archives. One volume will store the primary mailbox. So you can use the kind of storage topology you want. If you're in a hybrid deployment, you can have some users with primary and archive on premises, and you can have some users with primary and archive in the cloud. Also, there's a third option called Exchange Online Archiving, or EOA. Now, what this allows you to do is have an on-premises primary mailbox, and for that same user, have the archive in the cloud. Now, given the amount of storage you get, this is a very attractive choice for a lot of people. You get unlimited storage at a very low price. I think it is somewhere around $3. So in one step, you can get all your historical old email from 7 years, 10 years, or whatever, moved to the cloud at a very low price. For the admin, how does it look like for the admin? They're able to do rapid provisioning. Just when they create the mailbox, they can create the archive at the same time using EAC, the Exchange Admin Console, the web-based console, or using the shell. So again, it's just like managing mailboxes. On the screenshot you see on the left side, the archiving enabled section right in the middle, and it's a single click to enable or disable, and then you can monitor how much space they're using, which shouldn't be a concern if you're in Office 365 because it's virtually unlimited. Now, the other big thing with all these services being integrated and even on-premises, the servers being integrated, is the capability to archive, link data. Things like instant message conversations, things like all the conversations exchanged in a meeting, and so on. Files exchanged in a meeting, including PowerPoint decks and so on, all these can be archived as well. Previous versions, the way it worked is the user had to do it on the user end, and it would store this in the conversation history folder. And that's not the best way to do it. Admin could control it using group policy or registry settings or whatever, not a very clean way of doing it. In the new link, it basically, Link and Exchange do it on the server side. So when you enable it by placing an in-place hold on the user, Link automatically archives data to the user's mailbox in an area of the mailbox known as the recoverable items folder. We'll talk in more detail about that when we talk about in-place hold. So it's server-side. The data it includes instant messaging, meeting content, including files shared in the meeting and the conversations. How does it work? We already talked about it. It's server-side archiving. And it captures data from all types of link clients, which includes your PC clients, your web-based client, your mobile clients on different mobile operating systems, and so on. So all that data is captured. It's stored in the recoverable items folder. So once you have all this data archived, the next step is, of course, the ability to preserve this data. And when we talk about preservation, one of the big things is immutability. What does immutability mean? It means that you preserve the items, you protected it from deletion, and you protected it from tampering. So nobody should be able to go in, tamper with that data, modify their data, or delete that data. Now, historically, this has been done in different ways. For example, taking data out of Exchange, putting it into an archive, that users cannot touch or cannot delete. Maybe they have access to it, they can't delete it. Some companies even wrote that data, you know, on worm drives and thinking we're doing immutability. In fact, a lot of information that you'll find about immutability will talk about archiving data to write once media like worm drives. Now, we have a white paper called Achieving Immutability with Exchange and Online in Exchange 2013. The URL is at the bottom, aka.ms/immutability. Go take a look at that. Some terminology, housekeeping. So when we talk about preserving items, people talk about dumpster. Oh, it's stored in the dumpster. So let's do some housekeeping on that. It's not the dumpster anymore. That was never the official name. We may have called it informally in the past, but that was in previous versions. Starting with Exchange 2010, we and Wave 14 of Exchange Online, we re-architected what was formerly known as dumpster. And that dumpster basically was an area in the mailbox database where items that the user deleted permanently, or they thought they deleted permanently, would go and reside, but it was in a mailbox database at a database level. And it basically had allowed the user to recover those items. The admin can go and say, keep these items in that location for about 30 days, and then purge them from the database. Starting with 2010, we have this recoverable items folder, which is an immutable store. And it's part of every mailbox, okay? Except the user can't see all of it. Now, the benefit is, of course, when you move a mailbox, that moves with it. So 2010, we introduced litigation hold. And litigation hold basically allowed you to place a mailbox on hold. It was binary, yes or no, true or false, hold or not, right? So once you place this mailbox on litigation hold, we preserved the mail and we didn't allow, even if the user deleted and they went into recover deleted items and deleted it from there, thinking it's gone permanently, we would still hold that data. Then customers asked us, okay, we don't want all that data to be held indefinitely. We want to hold it for a fixed period of time. So then came time-based hold. Now in Office 365, this was done by adding one parameter to litigation hold called litigation hold duration that allowed you to set number of days you wanted to place and hold for. So litigation hold duration. Now with Exchange 2013 and new Exchange Online, the Wave 15, we have what is called in-place hold. And that takes another step further. It basically allows you to place an in-place hold, meaning hold everything, just like litigation hold. It allows you to do a time-based hold, specify the duration, the number of days you want to hold it for. And the third thing it allows you to do is do a query-based hold. And that's what customers ask for, is we want to be able to run a query, see the items, and we want to only place those items on hold. So the good part is, of course, not only you can hold items that match your query parameters, you could also have multiple holds. So if you have a user who has data, he's a custodian, and there are multiple cases going on that he's subject to, you could create multiple holds for that user with different keywords. And in addition to that, you could also place an unlimited hold, which is not time-based and not query-based also. This is true for Office 365 as well. So the way these updates work is they come to Office 365 first now. That's the new cloud development cadence, right? And then we package these up and release it, the relevant updates in the next version of Exchange on-premises. So in Exchange on-prem, this has been since 2013, and corresponding to that, the Exchange Online or Office 365, Wave 15 has had that. So a lot of flexibility now. The other thing to remember is litigation hold is not gone. So if you were comfortable using that, that's still available. I think when we launched 2013 on Wave 15, we said we're going to remove litigation hold at some point. And we got some customer feedback, and we've decided now we're not going to remove litigation hold. So both these mechanisms are available to you to preserve the data. So we removed it from online earlier. Are you still getting it online?
I saw that maybe like a month ago.
Okay, so in online it is gone. And in on-premises, we removed it in SP1. In fact, I probably have a blog post about it titled, the message that said, litigation hold is going to be deprecated, and we recommend, I don't know the exact message, it's in my blog post though. It's just a warning saying, hey, use in place hold, that is what we recommend. So we removed that error. And the blog post is litigation hold and in place hold. And it basically actually gives you a comparison of, you know, the nuances of each feature and when to use what. So you can make the decision yourself. So that's the evolution of in-place hold. Now let's go take a look. The other thing that I do want to mention about in-place hold is from the UI, it is integrated with e-discovery. So now in a single step, you can do an e-discovery search, and when you can preview the data, and then you can place that in hold. So let's take a look at that. So I am going to go here into my Office Online portal. Okay, I'm logged in as Katie Jordan, and I should probably log out because she may not have permissions to do e-discovery. Let's sign out. And for some reason, this is going to ask me to close all browser tabs. Okay, so let's start here. Let's go to our Office 365 portal. And you can do the same thing in on-premises, of course. So admin at archivedemo. So the difference is on-premises, you won't have this Office 365 console, of course. You would just have the Exchange EAC, the Exchange Admin Center. So first thing to remember is, for a user to be able to do e-discovery or hold, they need e-discovery management permissions. So that's role-based access control. You can go and assign it. Let's go and check if my admin has the permissions to do that. By default, admins don't, but I just set this up. So I go to permissions, admin roles, discovery management, and see if anybody has these permissions. And I think the way this is set up, we've given everybody permission, or a few users actually, to do that permission discovery, including the admin, which is good. Otherwise, I could simply go here and add any user and give them permissions to do a discovery. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's go to compliance management. And the first tab that you see is in-place e-discovery and hold. I don't have any e-discovery or hold items created, so let's go ahead and create a new one. So I'm going to say all users. I could give it a case name or whatever. I could say indefinite hold. I could give it a long description. Now, for e-discovery, you can simply say search all mailboxes, but to place users on hold, you have to specify the mailboxes that you want to place on hold. So I'm going to have to go here and select. Now, what this lets me do is, of course, specify a distribution group. And it will expand the members, but that will only happen at the time you specify the distribution group. So if you add new users, you add them to the same distribution group, they're not automatically going to be picked up. You're going to have to go and refresh the search. Okay, so let's go and place Katie's mailbox on hold here. Let's also add My friend Robin counts, Scott Schnoll, let's do Nino. Let's add all these mailboxes and click OK. So we specified the mailboxes. Now let's move on. If I wanted to do a query-based search here, I can simply specify the query here. Let's try that. But if I don't specify a query, of course, it's going to hold everything. I'm going to filter based on criteria. And I know everybody talks about sports, so I'm just going to use that. But this could easily be patents or any other term that you wanted. You could specify a start date, end date. I'm just going to say hold everything. You can say from, to. You could also select different message types to hold. For example, just email messages or tasks or contacts. I want to hold everything. I don't want to differentiate. So once I've specified my query, I am going to say place content matching the search query in selected mailboxes. Once I do this, I can either hold this data indefinitely, or I can specify the number of days I want to hold this data for. So for example, if I wanted to hold this for 7 years, not accounting for leap years, times 365 days, that would be 2,555 days. So I can say that, hold this data for 7 years, right? And I say finish. And that is going to now place a hold on the selected mailboxes, and it is a query-based hold, as you saw, with the term sports only. But I could go back and change that to hold all items. Now, the good part about doing this is it's totally transparent to the user. You placed and hold. You didn't have to go to the user and say, hey, don't stop deleting messages. Your retention policies that automatically delete messages, you don't have to go and make any changes to those. Those can continue working the way they are. Hold works in the background. And here we're done with that. So that's our hold right there. Now, I could also go and say, estimate search results now. And once I've done that, I could go and preview search results also to see whether my search query really worked or not. Okay. Let's click on that. There we go. Preview search results. So this basically opens up an OWA-like browser. And you basically see the mailboxes on the left side, and you see any search results. And you know what data you're going to hold. But the good part is, it's not going to hold the data that is in there today. If you did not specify an end date, which is what we just did, it's going to then execute that query against all messages that are going to be delivered in the future. So that hold is going to continue if you don't specify an end date. And no matter what user does with messages, if it matches my query, then I'm going to keep on holding that data for the time specified. So it looks like this is taking a little longer. We'll come back to that. But you see how this works. It's integrated with eDiscovery. And I've, in a single step, being able to search messages. And I'm able to place those messages on hold. Now, if I wanted to do the other legacy litigation hold, I would have to go to recipients. I would have to select a recipient here, which is Allie, and I would have to go into properties, and this should give me an option to place litigation hold. Litigation hold is right now disabled. So again, this is a separate feature. This does not give you this flexibility of doing a query-based hold. It's just hold everything. So I can say for Ally only, I will enable hold here. I can write a little note saying indefinite hold or whatever. And I can provide a URL that shows up in Outlook so they know that they're on hold. And save that. So you just saw litigation hold for one user. You saw in-place hold, a query-based in-place hold for another user. Of course, I could go and use the shell to place all these users on hold very, very easily. Would you like to see that? Okay. Yes. Yes, we place Katie's mailbox on in-place hold, which was a query-based in-place hold, and we place Ali's mailbox on a litigation hold, which doesn't allow you to specify a query.
And in both cases, if the user's mailbox gets deleted,
good question. Would we allow the mailbox to be deleted if it's on hold? We should not, and we do not. I'm sorry? What about disabling the mailbox? You could do that. In fact, that's a good question, too. In Exchange Online, in Office 365, we have a feature called inactive mailboxes. Now, user leaves the organization. You don't want to continue paying us a monthly cost for that, to hold on to that data. But you still want that data to be available for e-discovery for as long as you need it. So you can use inactive mailboxes. The technical information is on the Exchange team blog as well as on TechNet. It's aka.ms/inactivembx, and it shows you how to do that. So people call it free archiving, right? Okay. Well, on premises, you don't have to pay us a monthly fee, so it's not really relevant. Now, organizations have their own workflow for on-premises. For example, when I was doing IT work, I had an elaborate script written that would, you know, disable the mailbox, change the password, set an account expiration date, remove it from all security groups and distribution groups, and, you know, disable remote access, VPN access, and so on in a single script. But the fact is, on-premises, it's your storage, and you're not paying a client access license for disable mailboxes. In on-premises. But regardless, I mean, it shouldn't really matter so much because you're not really paying anything for that data. All you're doing is paying for your storage. So you can disable the account, right? That is the right way to do it, is disable the account, keep the account in there. Yes. After you remove the litigation hold, yes. After that, the normal process takes over. So if the data was supposed to be deleted, it will get deleted. In Exchange Online, we will hold that data for 30 days by default, including deleted mailboxes, right? We'll hold it for 30 days. So if 30 days have already elapsed and you remove the litigation hold, the next time we process it, we'll remove that mailbox. Any other questions on that? Okay, so let's move along. This was in-place hold. So litigation hold told us it takes up to 60 minutes to take effect. What I want to do quickly, or actually, let's move forward. I'll show you first how that works. Okay, so in-place hold, litigation hold, we preserve, and let's take a look at how we preserve. So again, not a dumpster. The recoverable items folder in every mailbox is an immutable store. A message arrives into the inbox generally. You may have an inbox rule, move it to some other folder, or user may have a hierarchy of custom folders, right? When they delete the message, it goes into the deleted items folder by default, but there's a setting in Outlook that can change that, right? User can also press Shift Delete and bypass the deleted items folder, and now the item ends up in the recoverable items folder in a deletions subfolder, okay? Now, when the user deletes that item, empties the deleted items folder, there's a setting in Outlook also that says empty deleted items when I quit Outlook. So it automatically does that. Now they want to recover it, so there's something called deleted item retention period. By default, I think it's 14 days or 30 days, whatever it is. During that period, the user can go into recover deleted items. And what they see is the deletions subfolder. And they're able to recover items from there. Now, they can actually go and delete it from there too. And that's where our preservation and hold kicks in. So message is deleted. It's called a soft delete because we've not purged it from the database. So the soft delete is user empties deleted items or hits shift delete, and now it's in the deletions folder. Message is purged by the user. So if the user is smart enough, they go to recover items and they delete that item thinking it's gone permanently. It's not. If the user is on hold or if has single item recovery enabled, which is another feature, it's a recovery feature, item goes into the purges folder. Now it's hidden from the user. They think it's gone. Okay? Message is purged by the user. When they're on in-place hold, goes into the discovery hold subfolder. Again, not visible to the user. Now, message is edited while it's in the inbox or any folder, or even in the deletions folder. Now, users have capability. Users can do some pretty strange things that we've never heard of or can't imagine, right? They can go and edit the message using some tool, even Outlook maybe, right? We want to protect them from not doing that, or actually let them do that. What we do is create a copy of the original message. Process is known as copy on write, or COW, and we move that copy of that original message to the versions folder. So every time a user now tries to tamper with that message, or there is some automated process that is doing it, we will create a copy of that message before it's edited and save it in the versions folder. So we will have a running version history. We will track changes that are made to that item. Now, messages are purged. Your deleted item retention period, yes. The process is the same. The folder hierarchy may be a little different, but regardless, it shouldn't matter. Just think of it as an immutable store, and all the subfolders below deletions are not visible to the user. They are all discoverable. That's the good part. That's exactly precisely why we're holding them, is to make keep them discoverable for as long as we need to. Okay, so deleted item retention period of 14 days or 30 days expires. Now the messages are in the discovery holds. Now your mailbox assistant runs, and it basically evaluates that messages. And if they don't meet your hold criteria, remember, in my case, I only held messages that have the keyword sports in them. So it'll then go and evaluate this while purging it. And if it meets that criteria, it's retained. If it doesn't, it's permanently gone. Now, if you did not specify any keywords in your query, all the data is going to be held there until the duration that you specified in your hold elapses. Now, if you did not specify a duration there, then it's going to be held forever until you remove the hold. So that's the MFA. It evaluates the item, and when it finally purges that item, that is called a hard delete. Once the item is hard deleted, it is not recoverable. Now, two ways of doing in-place hold. I already showed you one, which is through the Exchange Admin Center. You can also use SharePoint, and SharePoint has a new e-discovery center. Okay, you go and create an e-discovery center website within your SharePoint. On-premises, it requires a little bit of integration work. Good news is, in the cloud, it's all integrated by default. And you can create your e-discovery searches, manage cases, and you can also place items on hold as part of that directly from SharePoint. Some implementation considerations, of course. First one doesn't apply to you if you're in the cloud, but you might want to monitor that, is storage requirements. The more data I hold, my storage requirements are going to grow, right? Logical. Recoverable items quotas are separate from mailbox quotas. So your mailbox quota may be 50 gigs, your recoverable items quota may be 30 gigs. And when you place items on hold for 7 years or 10 years, you want to see what is the traffic, what is the volume of data that you're holding for each mailbox, and increase or tweak the limits as required. And I think in Exchange online, the way this works is you still have to, I'm not sure if you still have to call us to raise the quota on recoverable items. So I'm not sure. I think in the past you had to call us, but it's already there probably that it will get raised automatically. I'm not sure if it's rolled out widely, so some of this information is. Placing all users on hold or for a fixed duration. Again, you want to calculate how much data they're going to accumulate every year and how long you are placing them on hold for. And then also account for versions. If there are too many versions of something, that's going to increase your storage requirements. Yes?
Sorry for all the questions, but is there a built-in audit mechanism where you know when this limit hold was placed, when that user was added to
Yes.
it, when this additional keyword was added?
Good question. So auditing allows you. In fact, there are pre-canned reports for both in-place hold and litigation hold. So these things do get audited, and you can get those results from there. And if time permits, I'll show you the...
That's on-premise and...
Both on-premises as well. It's part of the ESE console, so it's there in both versions. So does that answer? Can I audit holds? Who placed a hold? Who removed a hold? Yes, you can. Also, there is a commandlet audit logging. So under the covers, everything runs using a commandlet. So all the get logged by default. Okay. In-place hold and litigation hold, there are two features. Again, go to my blog post and you can decide which one works for you. I've had some customers who say they still like litigation hold. And that's one reason, you know, it's not deprecated, it's still there, and we've removed the error message as well. Placing a user on multiple holds is another consideration. You can have a user on multiple in-place holds for different cases, okay? But beyond a certain limit, it doesn't make sense to hit the mailbox with so many queries, and we just treat it as a litigation hold. Basically, we hold everything. So that's something to keep in mind. So the key benefits, risk mitigation. You're basically protecting yourself by... And when do you want to place users on hold? Any ideas? What's the best time to place users on hold? Is it after you've received a e-discovery request? Or after the user has deleted data? No? Of course not. So a lot of organizations, again, to implement, let's say, a standard retention period, they would just say, hold everything for 7 years. But part of the golden rules of e-discovery is to place the hold as early as possible. The moment you suspect you're going to be subject to litigation, those users should be placed on hold. And there are a lot of cases you can go and search online. In fact, the first slide that I showed, just go and look for e-discovery fines. You get a long list of some very famous cases. And there was one company, I don't know how many here would know about it, their retention policy was 14 days. So scary, isn't it? And it was, yes. So the question is, you want to put all users on hold for a fixed duration. So let's say 7 years. You can create one in-place hold for 7 years and place all of the users on that. Then you said you have individual departments that have different retention. For example, finance. Let's say whole company 7 years, finance is 10 years. You could create a separate in-place hold for finance and add all those users there and keep that data for 10 years or 20 years. You know, if the users were in both places, it wouldn't hurt, okay? But you don't have to. If you have a way of separating that, you can say, okay, you know, all non-finance users in this hold, all finance users in this finance hold, and so on. Again, I talked about it actually, that yes, you can use a distribution group. The important thing to remember is the distribution group expansion is done at the time you create the hold or you update the hold object. So if you have new users in that distribution group, then you're going to have to go and update the hold object. You can change the description maybe, or just have a script do that automatically, you know. Every time you add a user to a group, have that script run and it'll just go and update the group. And that way, the distribution group expansion occurs again, and all those users will be placed on hold. Okay. So risk mitigation, minimal business interruption. Good part is this does not interrupt you in any other way. It doesn't interrupt the user. It doesn't interrupt the user's workflow. Some organizations require, and some geographies require, some governments require that users be informed when their data is put on hold. A lot of them do not. So that is up to you and your organization. The mechanism is there to make it as seamless as possible or to inform the user if you would like to. And when you're doing e-discovery and when you're doing hold, the good part is there is no additional load on your on-premises Exchange servers in terms of search and in terms of indexing because we've already indexed that data before. Exchange search uses that same index, so that data is already indexed. Now, targeted in-place hold or the query-based hold that we talked about, it allows you to hold as little data as is required for you to meet your business or legal requirements. So you're not holding a mailbox, entire mailbox for 7 years, 10 years. You're only holding what you want. Okay, now we've talked about archiving. We've talked about hold. Let's take a look at email lifecycle, deleting messages when they should be deleted. Now, also known as, or the feature that we introduced in Exchange 2010 was MRM, Messaging Records Management. Let's see how that works. So why do you want to do MRM? Number one reason, mostly for on-premises now, is storage. Mailboxes will keep on growing if you don't delete messages after a certain number of years, depending on your requirements. There are business requirements that say, I only want to keep messages for X number of years. There are legal and regulatory requirements that require you to keep messages. And then you should be able to demonstrate that I'm only keeping messages for this period of time. A lot of companies, your audits will require you to show, hey, you're not keeping messages below beyond the 7 year or 10 year or whatever time frame it is that you're required to keep it. So these are the requirements for MRM. How does it work? It works using delete policies and archive policies. Now, in a single policy, you can specify after 2 years, for example, messages should move to the archive, and then after 7 years, they should be deleted. So messages will spend about 2 years in the inbox or the mailbox, and then another 5 years in the archive, and after 7 years, no matter where the message is, it will be deleted. No, you cannot. And I think I just responded to that. What are you on Twitter? Is that a Twitter question? Because I just responded to that, I think, this morning. And the question was, can I have a different policy for the primary mailbox and for the archive? So we treat both of them as the same. Yes. Yes.
We want them to be able to move everything to their online archive for an indefinite period.
Yes.
Inbox has a 90-day retention.
So what you would do is you would create an archive policy with a time limit of 90 days, and you would create a delete policy with whatever your period is, let's say 5 years. So you would create a policy for 5 years, which will result in messages automatically moving to the archive after 90 days and then being deleted after 5 years or whatever your period is.
And so one of the things that we have done and we have basically trying is to create, within the same policy, create a personal tag that's unlimited.
Yes.
Retention. So although the people have the same MRM policy, let's say for 90 days, users can actually select their personal tag.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it should. But hold on to that question because we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's get to a little bit more information about how these tags work. So how do you implement this? You implement this using retention policies. Retention policies are containers where you group together a bunch of retention tags. This allows you the flexibility to apply a different retention policy to different groups of users within your organization. So that's a retention policy. Now, retention tags, what are these? These are simply objects that you create. We'll go through that. The tag type determines where it's applied. The action or the retention action determines what it does, what happens to the message once they meet the retention age. You can either move it to archive, you can delete and allow recovery, you can delete permanently, or you can disable, have retention disabled, which means do nothing to that message. And the retention age is, of course, the time period. Now, there are three types of tags. One is called the DPT, default policy tag. Think of this as the mailbox tag. This applies to the entire mailbox, including the archive. And every time we talk about retention policies, remember that it applies to the primary and the archive mailbox. So there's no separate retention policies. If you only have the DPT, that gives you, the admin, full control. You can say, delete all messages in 2 years, no matter where they are, whether they're in the mailbox or the archive, and provide nothing else. So that's one way of going about it. If your organization has strict requirements, you are probably going to go by this route. Just set a DPT, say hold everything for 7 years, for example, and have a hold also for 7 years, and you're done. Okay. The second type of tag is RPT, retention policy tag. Now, think of this as a default folder tag. When you create a mailbox, it has a lot of folders created by default. There's a whole list in the help topic that is linked at the end of the presentation. Things like inbox, deleted items, junk mail, drafts, calendar, tasks, and conversation history, and so on. So you can go, and if you want to really get fancy, specify a different retention period for each one of them. Some it makes sense. I don't want to keep on holding to my junk mail for more than 14 days or maybe 20 days or whatever. That's sufficient time for the user to go and clear out their junk mail. But getting too fancy and, you know, with all these settings also tends to confuse users because they don't know where an item is and when it's going to get deleted or moved. So that's the RPT. And then finally, there's personal tags. For organizations that don't want to be very strict about their retention, where they could say, I can have a DPT that says hold everything for X amount of time, but I want the user to be empowered to decide if there is a special case for an item related to a patent or a legal filing or a financial filing or what have you, that they want to delete it later. So that sets an exception on the item, okay? I also get up tons of newsletters, and the value for that is only 3 days. I don't want to store them beyond 3 days. So I can create a personal tag for newsletters for only 3 days or 4 days, 5 days, a week maybe. And that'll delete your newsletters in 7 days. And users can apply these tags in Outlook or OWA, or they can create inbox rules and automatically apply these tags using the inbox rule. So newsletters sent by company blah, keep it for 7 days by applying that retention tag. Useful for exceptions, useful for quota management, okay, item level. The other thing is personal tags can be applied to both a folder as well as an item. So users can pretty much do what they want. So, yes. Yes, it is supposed to do that.
So we are seeing kind of very different behavior, like many people have that enabled.
Uh-huh. And it doesn't disable?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I think there is some help article on that, but if you ping me offline, I should be able to point you to that information. The question was, Outlook also has an archiving functionality. If I enable an in-place archive for a user, does it disable Outlook's archive functionality, which basically all it did was created a PST and archived it to that. That is precisely what we do not want to do. Also, there's documentation in Outlook to prevent people from creating PSTs, allow them to use any existing PSTs if they would like, but not move messages from a mailbox to a PST. So here's your PST, feel free to use it, but you can't move new messages to it. So there's a lot of flexibility on the Outlook side in deploying these as well. So let's take a quick look at the retention tags. The DPT applies to entire mailbox. Supported actions are move to archive, delete and allow recovery, and permanent delete. And you can have up to 3 DPTs in a mailbox, one to move items, one to delete items, and one to delete voicemail. Voicemail is the only exception where this tag applies based on the item type. So if you have unified messaging voicemail or other voicemail that it can identify as voicemail, it's based on the item type, you can set a DPT for that. For example, I only want my voicemail to be held 14 days, no longer. RPTs are for default folders. You can only have the delete actions on them. You cannot have a move action. The move action is only on the DPT or the personal tags. You can have one per each default folder in a retention policy. So you don't want to apply 2 inbox RPTs in the same retention policy. It'll prevent you from doing that. And personal tags applied by the user in Outlook or OWA can have any of those 3 actions. And you can have any number of them in a retention policy. But think about the users, because when they bring down that drop-down list of retention and archive policies, it is going to look crazy if they had 100 personal tags in there. So my recommendation is limit them to 20. But you could experiment with what works for you. So implementing our MRM, we've already talked about the different ways to do this. If you are, for example, in a strict environment, I absolutely want to retain and delete in 7 years all items, and I don't want users to have any choice. You can just go with a DPT, or you can go with a DPT and RPT, where you say, I want to specify settings for junk mail and deleted items and so on. With user participation, you can do a DPT, RPT, and personal tags. You can do just personal tags. It's all up to the user, right? And to guarantee hold, we'll take a look at that also. You combine retention policies, which delete, there are deletion policies, with hold, either in-place hold or litigation hold, and specify the duration there. So delete in 7 years and hold for 7 years. Here, if the user doesn't delete, the items get deleted. And here, if the user deletes before 7 years, the hold will preserve them. So combine the two, and you are able to meet your data retention goals. Yes?
Our organization, for some reason, has decided to create a bunch of custom folders.
Okay.
Specific retention periods on them. Is there a way to back end script the application of personal tags on?
Great question. So users have created a whole bunch of custom folders, and you, as the admin, the organization, wants to be able to specify retention on those custom folders. Now, the only way to do that is personal tags, but admins cannot directly apply personal tags to custom folders, or any folder for that matter. Personal tags are totally user-based, right? However, there are scripts out there, including on some Microsoft blogs, not Exchange Team blog. I think one of them would be aka.ms/personal-tag-script. Go check that out. But it's not something that I would guarantee you. It's something that you would need to test. I'm not willing to say if it's going to work on it, because these are all unverified scripts, right? So go check that out, personal-tag-script. And aka.ms is our shortcut domain. So we're kind of running out of time. I'm going to improve workflow. So on the left side, you're see the drop-down in OWA, in Outlook, looks kind of similar. On top, you see archive policies. On the bottom, you see retention policies. User can select an item, an individual email message, and apply a move policy and a different delete policy. They can also do it on folders. So that's the user side of it. So single menu, transparent user experience. What you see is properties of the deleted items folder. So if you've applied an RPT to the deleted items folder, that is what the user sees. A, he sees on the message itself, he sees that the retention policy called delete after 10 years has been applied to that message, and it will delete the item in 10 years. The other thing that they can see when they go to folders properties is the policy that is applied by the admin. In this case, it says enforced deleted items policy 30 days. And the user can apply a custom move policy. So delete policy was controlled by the admin. They can still apply a move policy to deleted items. and move it to the archive. We talked about this, how to guarantee that items are deleted in 7 years, for example, and retained for 7 years. So protect them from user deleting it prematurely and absolutely delete it if user does not delete them. You combine the in-place hold with a retention policy, and you accomplish that goal. So we have 10 more minutes. I think we can just summarize here, and I will go through a quick demo. And if time permits, I can show you something new that we're doing with compliance. Let's quickly go to... Okay, so let's see how this works first. I go to my compliance management. This is my Exchange Admin Center. And I go to retention policies. I have two retention policies. There is a default MRM policy, and there is a company retention policy. So I can go ahead and quickly create a retention policy here. Let's say corp execs, okay? And I can select from the existing retention tags that I have created, okay? So I will give this user a 1 month delete tag. I will give them a 1 week delete tag. So these are all personal tags that the user can apply. I can give them a default 2 year move to archive. Or if that doesn't meet my requirements, we can go and create an additional retention tag for this policy. So I'll hold on to this. What else do I want to? I want to say inbox should only be there for 180 days. So after that, delete items from the inbox. And I'm not following any rhyme or reason here. I'm just showing you how it's done. Junk mail should be deleted in 30 days. So I've picked from existing retention tags and created a retention policy and called it corp execs. Okay, I haven't applied it to anybody yet, so there's still time to tweak it. My inbox policy for execs 180 days didn't sound too good to me. So I'm going to go to retention tags, and I'm going to create a new retention tag. And the new retention tag can apply to an entire mailbox, which means it's a DPT, or it can apply automatically to a default folder. This is what I want. I want it for the inbox. So I select that, and I say corp execs. Let's give them 700 and what's 2 years? How many days is 2 years? Let's say 365 times 2 is 730 days. So let's give them a 2 year inbox and let them delete and allow recovery of those messages. 730 days. So corp execs delete in 730 days and allow recovery. I just created that tag. Now I'm going to go back to my retention policy. I'm going to go to the new corp execs policy. And in here, I'm going to remove the inbox default retention tag. And I'm going to add the new tag that I just created for the inbox called corp execs. Is that what I called instead of inbox? I just called it 7? Okay. I'm not going to fix that right now. Let's add that to that policy as well. And click OK. So now I've given them an inbox for 730 days. Okay. Now you see there's nothing that deletes email automatically here. So let's go and create one more tag. We're going to go here. We're going to say apply to entire mailbox. So that's a DPT. So corp execs DPT, let's say 7 years. Which is strange because my inbox is only 730 days. This directly conflicts with that. But I'm going to permanently delete in 7 years. So 365 times 7 should be 2555. So 2,555 days. And corp execs delete in 7 years. Okay, so I've created that permanently delete policy. And now I go here to my retention policies again, and I'm going to go and edit this policy and add that DBT to it. So carp X DBT, execs DBT 7 years. Let's go ahead and add that to the policy, and there we go. Okay, we have ourselves a policy. Now, we could also go ahead and add a DBT to move to archive in 7 years. I totally forgot about that. That's an existing tag. So let's also add that. It should be the default 2 years move to archive policy that already exists. Click OK, add that. Now I have a retention policy that I more or less wanted, right? Now I take this retention policy and I apply it to users. If you have users who are in a group called execs, it should be simple. You can just go to PowerShell and apply that, expand the distribution group. Here, let me show you the two ways of applying. I can go to recipients. I identify all these are my exec mailboxes. Let's see if it allows us to apply them in bulk. Okay, bulk edit. More options. Retention policy. So I am going to apply corp execs policy to all these users that I selected. So 11 users, 11 of my execs are now going to get that policy. When is it going to be processed? The next time the mailbox assistant, also previously known as the managed folder assistant, the commandlet is still called the managed folder assistant, by the way. When that runs next time, it will go ahead and process the mailboxes based on this new policy. And old items will be moved older than 2 years, moved to the archive. Older items older than 7 years will be deleted. Yes?
If you delete a tag, so what happens to the messages that actually have that specific tag? Do they default to the default tag?
So when you delete a tag, the items will need to be processed again, and they will not be deleted. Now, when you remove the tag from the user's policy, the tag still exists. Items that were already tagged with that policy will still be processed because the tag still exists and it was applied to that item at some point, right? So not a good idea to delete tags. I would rather disable tags, right? And then after a while, you can probably delete them, but you can just leave them around too. Okay, if you do not have any questions, there is a new console that we're working on, and I think I still have 2.5 minutes. So before that, any more questions? Yes?
Your retention policy is applied to the recoverable items.
So the recoverable items has its own retention policy, yes. But it's not something that we encourage customers to play with. But there is a tag for the retention. Now, what it does by default is move items from the primary mailbox, recoverable items folder, to the archive. Yes. Yes, so that's its only purpose. Yes. Could I ask you to use the mic, please?
Reports that get sent out to the user before deleting emails?
Was your question, are there any disposition notifications,
yep,
emails? No, there are not. There are not. But users can see it in Outlook. When they click on a message, it shows them the expiration date there.
Are there any plans of including that in future?
We welcome your feedback on that. I now do not have a lot of customers asking for such notifications. But if you do, feel free to share the feedback. You can send me an email also. I'll be happy to move that forward. And if enough customers want such a feature, then okay. Any other questions? Yes, I think it should already be available. I only updated it this morning, so sorry. That's what I typically do. My slides get updated till. Okay, so I wanted to quickly show you in the 40 Seconds, really? Okay, let's go. Let's quickly go and see if I'm still logged in to Sarah test. Okay. Okay, if that login doesn't work, it worked. Okay. Hopefully we can see the new console, which is a unified compliance console. And what we're trying to do is, you know, have the same console for compliance for things like retention, deletion, e-discovery across all of Office 365 workloads. So give me a few seconds here, and let me go back to my text, and let me see if that works for us. Okay, there it is. Awesome. So this is the new compliance console. This is still a work in progress. So what you're seeing on screen is a single compliance console that allows you to archive, that allows you to delete using retention tags or deletion policies in SharePoint. Okay. It allows you to do auditing. It allows you to do data loss prevention, e-discovery across Exchange and SharePoint. Here's your e-discovery site collections. It lets you do encryption, rights management. It lets you do hold. So all these things are going to be possible from a single compliance console. So that's all I have to share with you. That's work in progress right now. When it's ready, I can't really give you an exact date. I just wanted to share this with you. We shared this first at the Exchange conference, so I wanted to show you what it looks like.
So you said next week?
You got that. Okay. So, I'm sorry? For in-place hold and custom tags, why do we require an enterprise CAL? That's a licensing question. I'm not a licensing person, but it's supposed to be advanced functionality. Some advanced functionality on-premises requires an enterprise CAL. In-place hold, legal hold, and personal retention tags are one of them. But what we did with e-discovery was we removed the requirement for enterprise CAL for e-discovery, and I had a post on the Exchange team blog related to that when we did that. So we are listening to customers, and you know, when a lot of customers said, hey, you should not require an enterprise CAL for us to do e-discovery, we listen to you. So related content, let's see, there is the session on e-discovery, I think it's tomorrow at 10:15. Si Young is presenting that. I'll be available at the Office 365 booth. You can follow me on Twitter at bsunasia. You can also follow the Exchange team at MSFT Exchange, and there are some hashtags if you're keen on Twitter, MS Exchange, Office 365, and archiving of the hashtags. There's also compliance and e-discovery, but I didn't have space for that. Some short URLs for you if you want documentation and help on these topics is in-place archiving, aka.ms/archive. For retention, it's aka.ms/delete. Or aka.ms/retention, both will work. Hold, there is aka.ms/preserve, or aka.ms/hold. Multiple ways to get to the same content, basically, whatever keyword you happen to remember. And my two-part post on the Exchange team blog is aka.ms/IPHP1 and P2 for part one and part two. So plenty of resources there. We also have a solutions advisory board meeting. I think it's later today at 4 in the Hilton in room 335A. So if you're integrating in, you know, different kinds of environments, you could go to this discussion, this presentation by the solutions advisory board. They have a lot of useful resources. Garage Series Live, I presented one yesterday. I'll be presenting one tomorrow. I think the time is around 11:20 in the office booth. We have a lot of gifts and giveaways. the usual resources. And please complete an evaluation. Let us know how you like this content, hated it, loved it, liked it, or meh, it's okay. Either way, we'd like to hear from you. So please go ahead and leave some feedback. Thanks again for coming. I think our next presenter is in line waiting for me. But I'll be, thank you.